me.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for downloading the show. This is Garden Fork. It's an eclectic DIY podcast. We talk about basically whatever comes into my head or my friends' heads, and they email me and go, let's talk. So today we're going to talk about 10 tools every homeowner should own and 3 they shouldn't. And the guy who sent me this list is Will from the Weekend Homestead. Welcome, sir.
How are you doing, Eric?
I'm good. We had some microphone problems, so we just fixed them.
You sound super great now.
So this is typical of how Will and I work. Will has some great ideas. He emails them to me, and we talk about them. And we talked about 15 things you could do when you're stuck at home. And we got such a great response from that. We did a second show. Those would be previous ones in your podcast player or on the website. And now we have 10 tools every homeowner should own, because you maybe are still stuck at home and thinking about some projects.
The Washington Post had a great article. I know a bunch of people had said, you know, these lists of stuff to do is awesome, but, you know, I just bought a house, or I'm just moving into an apartment or moving out on my own. And what kind of tool should I have in my house to do all this stuff that you guys are suggesting to do? So I thought the Washington Post article was kind of a good summary of it. And I figure we could debate out some of the pieces, because I know there's some items like the cordless drill where everybody has an opinion of, and I know you and I might have different opinions and everybody else will, but it's kind of nice to talk about them.
And believe it or not, people have different opinions on claw hammers, which is the first one.
You know, the claw hammer thing, I will say this, and this is something for all of the items on the list. When you're going to buy them, and you're standing at the home improvement store, or if you're going to buy it online, there's usually the really cheap one and the super expensive one, and there's usually one in the middle. I usually go with the one in the middle, because I've learned that if I buy the really cheap, whatever it is, I end up replacing it a year later or wherever. And now I spent twice as much because I've had to buy 2 really cheap ones. If you go with the middle one, or even the high-end one in some cases, it's always better than just buying the cheapest one you can find.
Yeah, you get what you pay for. We're going to talk about that actually a little bit later in the show with a different item, a different topic. But claw hammers, what I've discovered is people will buy the shiny, big, I think it's called a carpenter's hammer. It has a very long neck or throat or handle. And it's made by Estwing a lot of times. It's shiny stainless and it has a blue rubbery grip end on it. And you really need to have some strength and control to use a hammer like that.
I've actually found, there's different types of handles. There's the metal handle, the fiberglass, and the wood ones. The mid-priced one at like the Orange Store or the Blue Store or those guys, they usually have the rubber handle with the fiberglass neck. And then it's a mid-size lightweight hammer, which if you're going to use it a lot during the day, having a heavy hammer versus a light hammer, you will notice the difference. And in all reality, the price difference between the really expensive one and the mid-priced one, there's a pretty significant difference between them. And the middle price one is probably the one that would work for 90% of the folks out there. If you're doing it for your job, you probably want the higher end one.
Yeah, I have it's red, has a red fiberglass handle on with a rubber pad around it and a decent size head. And I've had it 15 years.
I actually tell people, when you're going to buy a hammer, buy 2 of them, because ultimately you'll be using it for something and then you have one somewhere else or wherever. And it's always nice to have maybe one in the drawer in the house and one out in the garage or the shop, so you're not going back and forth. They're not that expensive and they won't break the bank.
Yeah. That's where I get my steps in now, is I'm in the garage, which is separate from my house, probably like 60 feet away. And for every project I do in the garage, I have to run to the house about 4 times.
That happens a lot. You want to talk about number 2 on the list, screwdrivers?
Yeah, I have strong opinions about this.
Let's hear it. What do you got?
I have a 6-in-1 and I'm very happy with it.
I will tell you this. There's a store called Harbor Freight, which a lot of people have around. And if you watch their flyers, they have a 6-in-1 that they do. If you buy a certain number of dollars worth of tools or stuff, you get a 6-in-1 for free or for 99 cents. I bought a handful of those and I threw one in the drawer in the kitchen, and there's one down by the furnace, and there's one in my car, and I kind of just toss them around places. and they seem to work really well in a pinch for almost anything before you have to go to the toolbox to actually get your good screwdrivers.
Let's talk about what a 6-in-1 or a 4-in-1 is. It's a screwdriver with a handle, and the shaft pops out, and you can flip it 180 and pop it back in again. And then each of those ends has a tip on a double pointed tip. So on one side, it's Phillips small. You pull that out and flip it. It's slotted small. And then you take the whole shaft out and flip it and then change the tip out, and it's Phillips large and slotted large. And then each of those ends of the shaft that pops in and out has a hexagonal hexagonal space in it. And those are nut drivers. So you can tighten up a nut with using just the shaft. And on a 4-in-1, that shaft is the same size. And a 6-in-1, it's two different sizes. So you've got Phillips large and small, slotted large and small, and two different, essentially, wrenches, box wrenches, and one thing.
Do you want to hear the interesting hack that you can do to a 6-in-1?
Of course.
So if you go to Harbor Freight, they have a star bit end. It's called a T, like 25, and the other side is a square end. So, you know, the piece that you swap in and out with the screwdriver heads?
Yep.
What I found is the Harbor Freight one fits right inside of the small end. So actually I have Phillips on one end, flathead, then I have star bit and square in one of my 6-in-1s that I use for electrical work, because sometimes you need that square head, sometimes they have the star head, and so on. And it's, you know, 50 cents or a dollar to get that piece. And now all of a sudden you can deal with four different types of screws and then two types of hex heads.
I did a little job for my neighbor, and there's no way I would take his money. No, her money. It's their money. Sorry. And like a week later, they gave me a Harbor Freight gift card.
I think Harbor Freight has a little bit of everything, and I think they're, you know, it's kind of middle of the road tools. Some of them are really cheap, but a lot of them, if you need a one-time tool type place, it's kind of my go-to place to get something like that.
Yeah, I mean, we're going off track because that's what we do in Garden Fork, but Will and I both have the same Troy-Bilt log splitter, and Troy-Bilt is a sponsor of Garden Fork. But what I don't like about it is the to level out the trailer hitch end of the log splitter is a little flip out, kind of like a little kick out piece of steel, like a U-shaped piece of steel, and it's clunky. So Will went and bought a regular, is it called a trailer jack?
It's a trailer tire or trailer wheel or something like that. It's a single wheel, like a plastic wheel on a metal bracket.
Right, and it's for when you take your trailer off your car, you flip that down, it has a little wheel and it rolls around, and you can lift it up and down with a little crank. Well, at Harbor Freight, they were on sale for $18, you know, and I'm like, okay, this isn't a daily driver. It's for my log splitter. So I went and bought that the other day, so.
For me, the biggest one is like I can set that thing in my pole barn and I can push it around, or if the wife needs to even move it around instead of having to lift the tongue and try to move it, because the log splitter is heavy. Yeah. It's tongue heavy. Having that wheel on there, my kid can push it around. It's so easy. So, I mean, it's one of those things where if you need to move it out of the way, it makes a big difference on moving it on a smooth surface.
Yeah. All right. So back to reality. Number four, sir.
Well, actually, let's do number three.
Oh.
Do number three first.
Oh, I wanted to skip the controversy.
Let's do that one at the end. Let's do number four, levels. So you're hanging pictures, you're hanging shelves, you're doing things, you know, in the house, and you need to put stuff on the wall. Having a good level, especially one that has like a magnetic strip on it, works really good. There's small bullet ones. They come in, you know, there's longer ones that are 3 foot and 4 foot. I think most people can get away with, you know, a 3 foot level, a plastic one, and a nice bullet level, and you can do pretty much anything around your house.
The smaller levels I call a torpedo level.
Yep. Yep.
This is actually a not discreet plug for the Garden Fork store on Amazon, but I have a whole tool section on the Garden Fork store on Amazon, and I have my favorite torpedo level that has three magnets built into the one side and there's no magnets on the other. And I love that level. And then I have a 2 or 3 foot one that's plastic, because you're going to drop that one off a ladder. And if it's metal and you drop it, it can become unlevel.
Well, the thing on the one with the magnet too, like we were hanging a television and trying to keep that on the metal mount at the same time as you're trying to level it with that magnetic, you just stick it right to it and you can move it around and let go of the level without trying to balance everything. And it made it super easy to do that.
Here's the problem with levels is if you live in an old house and you hang something that's level, it may not look right on the wall.
That is a good point.
My house is 120 years old and nothing is level or square. And you put something up and you're like, that doesn't quite look right. So I don't tell anyone. I just move it a little bit on the wall and then I sock it in.
I will say one item on the level in the older homes that I learned was when we're using the chop saw and cutting trim, that you cut trim and it's nice and perfectly square. Then you go to put it in there and you realize, okay, now I got to hand cut it or kind of shape it a little bit to make it look right because the floor might not be level, but your board is perfect.
Yeah.
And so then you end up having to kind of rig it a little bit to make it work. So that stuff is okay if you have to do that in your house. That's what happens when you have older properties.
Yeah. Also, I have never checked the accuracy of it, but a lot of smartphones have a level built in as an app.
I've used that, and actually they have something else now too. The iPhone has a tape measure built in, which we'll get to later on the list. That's one of the items on there. But the Level app now also has a tape measure in it too.
Oh, cool. All
right. Let's talk about number five. Needle nose pliers, or pliers in general. I mean, to be able to grab onto something and to, you know, fix something, or if you have to reach in somewhere to get something small that you dropped in there. I mean, that stuff happens. Something with a good rubber handle on it. Usually they have a cutter built in the middle. So if you have to cut some wire or something like that, it's kind of built in. What do you think on needle nose pliers?
Yes. And don't buy cheap ones. Buy ones with really nice thick rubber handles, because I use needle nose for electric work. And ideally everything is turned off. But if there is something turned on and you're in there with a needle nose, if they're the thickly insulated pliers, it's a less chance of you getting zapped.
Absolutely. Which brings me to the next item on the list, which I think is your favorite item, which is a pipe wrench, channel locks. I see you using them all the time in the videos, especially like when you did the heater video. I know you had them there. Talk about pipe wrenches. Why do people need pipe wrenches?
Well, you all need a 3-foot pipe wrench. I own two of them. They're amazing. The technology is probably 200 years old, and you get such a tremendous amount of leverage out of one. If you get a small one, like a 14-inch pipe wrench, and then you have what you call a cheater pipe, which is usually like an inch and a half piece of plumbing pipe that's 3 foot long, you have a multi-tool. You can get a nut, like if you own an old tractor and you need to get a nut off there, you can just hern on that thing and get it off. And then on a channel locks is a commercial. It's a brand name. It's kind of like Xerox when you say photocopier. I don't know what their generic name is, but I just call them channel locks, and buy a high end brand there. The mid range channel locks, I find they jump out of the channel when you're trying to really, really grab onto something. But they're great for piping, a nut you can't get off. They're super nice.
Well, the other nice thing too is they're adjustable, so they fit almost any size. So if you can't find the right thing to grab, if it's a 10 millimeter or 12 meter or whatever it is, channel locks, it doesn't matter. You just set it, grab it, and you know, give it a turn. The other thing it works well for is if you can't get in somewhere where you can't get a pipe wrench in, a smaller channel lock works good for tightening up a loose or leaky pipe if you have one, or, you know, if you're doing something with your gas, if you're a little bit more advanced, you can do something with your gas lines and things like that if you have to tighten a nut for that, or even working on your automobile, it works good. So, you know, it's kind of an all-around tool that I always have in my toolbox, because there's always somewhere where I can't reach or something's too tight or I don't have the right tool, a channel locks or a pipe wrench can probably get it.
Yeah, when you're under your sink of the bathroom vanity or the kitchen, the channel lock is great, because if you have one, they're all friction connections under there, the drain connections, and you can tighten one up, because you're not going to have the exact size wrench to get on all those nuts. And the channel lock comes into play there, and it works really well. If you still have a leak, you can take apart the plumbing underneath there and then get some Teflon pipe paste. It's kind of white. It's not cheap, but It's solved a lot of problems when I've had to put or re-put together drain pipe underneath a sink.
When we bought the resort, the Teflon tape paste that you're talking about, in fixing all of the plumbing connections, I went through 7 containers of that stuff. If that tells you how
Wow.
much plumbing we did. So that's it works great. I mean, one container, keep the lid tight and possibly put in a plastic bag and it'll last for a long time. You just got to keep it so it doesn't dry out.
And the key thing there is people think like friction fit or compression fit piping, it's not about the threads, it's about the mating surfaces. So underneath your sink, it's all about the mating surfaces sealing. So put the Teflon paste around those surfaces, not on the threads, because you put it on the threads, it's not going to do anything.
And less is more in that scenario. Don't over cake it on, because I have seen it before where people go crazy with the amount on there, and that actually can cause more problems than good. I mean, you have to put enough on there, but don't think that, oh, I have to make it so that you can't even see the connection anymore because there's so much paste on it.
Yeah. I imagine by now you've heard me talk about the Garden Fork patrons and the pre-show and the after-show, and I thought I'd give you like 30 seconds of what that's all about. Basically, there are people that listen to the show that contribute to the continued production of the show on a monthly basis, kind of like like NPR or PBS, where you sign on for X number of dollars a month. Like, I'm a member of PBS, and it's $6 a month. And for that, I get access to the older episodes of like Nova and their science and history shows and that kind of thing. With Garden Fork, if you sign on for $5 a month or more, if you have more, that would be quite nice. But if you don't, do not do that. Okay. But for that, I send out just kind of the Mind of Eric kind of emails that also can show up on the app if you get the Patreon app. And also the pre-show and after-show when I record a show with other people. Because invariably, Aaron and I, or Will or Rick and I, are talking about something else after the show because we forgot to talk about it in the show. And that's sometimes fun. It's really fun to listen to Rick tell me what I'm doing wrong with the show, but in a good way, because you need feedback like that. But you could also provide that feedback becoming a patron. So that information is in the show notes of today's episode. You can also go to patreon.com/gardenfork for more information about that. All right, so think about that, and we'll go back to the show. See ya.
Talk about Allen wrenches. That's number 7 on the list. If you have any toys or if you have any gadgets in the house or anything along those lines, a lot of things need Allen wrenches these days. They're the little hexagonal wrenches, and you can easily get a small pack of them, a metric one and a standard one, and it'll cover 95% of all the things that you'd ever want to open up or get into.
The Allen wrench sets that I really like on your average everyday carry kind of thing are the kinds that fold out like a Swiss Army knife.
Yes, absolutely. The ones in the bags that are all loose, I end up dumping the whole thing out, then spreading it on the table, and then finding the one that I'm looking for versus the one you're talking about. You just flip out the one, and if you're too big, you just go one down. If you're too small, you just go one up. And it's easy to know which ones are because they're always in the right order.
And also, when you flip it out, the case that it is in, that kind of Swiss Army knife case, serves as like a T-bar. I don't know really what it's basically a handle to turn the Allen wrench, giving you more torque.
The one thing you do have to be careful on is if you put the wrong size Allen wrench in the hole and you give it a turn, if it's too small, you can round out the hole on an Allen wrench. So you have to be really cautious to make sure you get the right one in the hole, because if you're like, oh, it's just a little too small, if you start turning it, that little bit too small can slip and it'll round out the hole that you're actually trying to tighten or loosen from.
And also, you need two of them because there's metric and SAE metric nuts and bolts out there. So that sounded stupid.
No,
Get
you're right. That's
metric
right.
Allen wrenches and SAE, or what's that called, imperial or USA measure ones as well. I mean, you know, it'll save you. One day you're going to need to take something apart, especially like TV mounts on the wall. I think all that stuff has Allen keys. And if you really want to up your game, you can buy sets of Allen keys or wrenches that are a socket set. And so essentially you turn your socket wrench into a big Allen tool, which is nice. Allen wrench.
Perfect. Next one on the list. This one is another one for you, Eric, a putty knife. I saw this on the list and I'm like, I know a guy who knows a lot about putty knives.
Yeah, I would suggest everyone buy what's called a 5-in-1, which is a putty knife that looks like it has a regular metal putty knife edge. And then all of a sudden there's this half moon carved out of the side of it. And then the end of the putty knife has a little point on it. And the other end of the putty knife has this blunt, thick end. So you have a scraper, you have a little pointed digger tool, you have a screwdriver or a paint can opener, and then the half moon thing is used when you're painting to strip paint or get paint off of a paint roller. When you want to save all the paint, you want to clean up the roller, you use your 501 to go along the paint roller back into the can.
I never knew that. I always wondered what that little half moon cutout of that was. I never knew it was taking that off of there. I thought it was for maybe like scraping quarter round or something like that.
The things you learned from me, Will.
That right there is the price of admission on the show.
It's funny how people don't know that. But I also have some putty knives that are plastic because they're sacrificable. Like if I know, like if I'm working with roof tar, I use a plastic putty knife because there's no way I'm getting all the roof tar off this thing. And it doesn't have to be perfect because it's roof tar. And it gets to be this point where I'm like, okay, we're just going to throw this roof tar putty knife out, and it goes.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Like the little plastic ones, even, and we can just slide paintbrushes in here because paintbrushes wasn't on the list, but getting a little pack of like this 1-inch, the 2-inch chip brushes, I think is what they're called. And yep. Just having a couple of them laying around, you never know. Like the other day, one of the boys was pushing one of their plastic containers of toys and they went up against the wall and basically gouged a little section in there. Well, we have textured walls. So all I did was go downstairs, get a chip brush, dip it in the paint that I had, repaint the spot. And it was good as new. But to even have a small pack of those, I mean, they're 50 cents or a dollar. You know, have that with your putty knife. You can fix things. And then if you need to touch up paint, it's always good to have a couple of those around and you can just throw them away when you're done.
And Harbor Freight sells those brushes in bulk.
Yeah. I think you can get like a pack of like 24 of them for what, $10 or $15?
Yep.
Something like that.
I get the 3-inch wide ones because there's a lot of times I need to slap a lot of paint on, like primer, really quick. And they're perfect for that.
Sure. Moving on to number 9, the staple gun. Lots of different types of staplers out there, but I think the T-Series is what it's called, is probably one of the best ones. Kind of all around the big, it's usually silver in color, and it can fit all sorts of different styles. It's not like a stapler that you'd use at your house to staple paper together. This is, hey, I need to put some screen on somewhere, or I need to put some paper or plastic up on the wall or something like that. A little bit more heavy-duty stapler is always good to have.
Yeah, these are actually in the Garden Fork store on Amazon, so I'll link to the store and you can go through. Don't cheap out on them. I've inherited some cheap staplers and I just threw them in the recycle. I have two different staple guns. I have the traditional one that does a regular rectilinear staple, and then I have a cable staple gun that puts out a looped staple for running wire. Or I use that for my garden trellises. I have a couple of videos about making my DIY garden trellises. And the cable stapler is great for looping twine on a raised bed or, well, you'll have to watch the video, won't you all? So yeah, two different staple guns.
There is one other staple gun you will see in the stores. You don't use it very often, but it looks kind of like a handle of a hammer, and then there's a straight stapler on it, and it's used for hanging plastic. We're actually using that right now to put the insulation and the plastic vapor barrier up in the office we're building at the resort. And you just hit the wall and it puts the staple in, kind of like you're swinging a hammer, but it leaves a staple behind when you're done hitting. You probably don't need that one unless you're going to be doing construction. Then that one is worth its weight in gold.
Or if you're roofing, that thing is handy for laying down tar paper.
Absolutely. Oh, actually, you can use it for anything on the tar paper, for that matter. I mean, if you're building something or lining the inside of a box or a planter or something like that, you know, that works really good for that. It's just, if you're going to be doing those types of projects, that's what that one is used for, if you see it, if you happen to be in the home improvement store or online.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about tape measures. I don't think you can have enough tape measures. I think I own at least a dozen of them.
Yes, buy more. There you go. Thank you.
There you go. All right, next thing on the list. But I'll tell you this. On the tape measures, I usually get the standard ones. I know that Harbor Freight always, at the same time they're doing the 6-in-1 free giveaway, occasionally they have the tape measure. I throw one in the car. I've got one in the tool box. I've got one in the drawer in the kitchen. They're just handy to have around because you never know, like, I got to measure this, or I'm running to the store or whatever it is. They work for anything, and they're usually fairly inexpensive.
So I have a story about tape measures.
Let's hear it.
My plumber and friend Carmine, who I would love to have on the show. I don't know if he would come on or not. He goes, oh, I just started watching YouTube. I'm like, okay, Carmine. He's a real Brooklynite. He's great. But I pay him and he, you know, fixes my boiler and my hot water heater. But if he's in the neighborhood, he's a one-man band. He doesn't like to work with anyone. But if he's in my neighborhood and he needs help with a water heater, I'll go over and help him, and I won't take his money. Because, you know, I get to see someone, my friend, we get to give each other a hard time. But the last time I helped him, he swung by the house later on and put in my mailbox, because I had made a comment. He used a tape measure, and it had a really rigid tape, and it had a magnetic tip on the end. And I was like, wow, that's really nice. So he went to Lowe's and bought me this tape measure. And I will try and link to it in the show notes, but it's my favorite tape measure now. It's a wide tape, easy to read numbers, because I am older now, with a magnetic tip. So you can take the tip and hit a pipe and then walk, you know, 15 feet away and see how far away you are. And that magnet sticks. And I really like that.
Can we talk a little bit about technology?
I thought we'd talk more about water heaters, but sure.
Hot water heaters. So I just found this out and I've tested it, and it actually works pretty good. So Apple, in the last upgrade or last couple upgrades, they have the Level app, but then it also has a measuring app where you take your phone and you turn on the measure and it makes you move your phone a certain direction so it can get the orientation. And then you push a dot on the screen and you move your phone along like you're measuring, and it'll measure on the screen. And then you hit the button and stop, and it'll take a picture with the measurement on it. So if you needed to measure something for your house, or you need to grab a quick measurement because, hey, a 4-foot shelf will fit in there, you take a shot of it. Then when you go to the home improvement store, you can look at the picture and go, oh, yeah, that was 48 inches or 40 inches. And it keeps the information on there. It's free on your iPhone. I don't know if Android has it, but I've used that a dozen times and I've tested it. You can't do like fine carpentry work with it, but if you need to get a rough measurement of, hey, is that 20 feet or is that 28 feet, it'll be easily able to grab that information for you.
Wow. I have to play with that.
See, you learned something while I'm on the show.
Yeah.
Should we talk about the last topic, the caustic one, cordless drills?
Yes.
That's the last item on the list. I will say there's a lot of brands. There's a lot of opinions. There's a lot of styles of cordless drills. I'll let you go first. Eric, what do you think of cordless drills?
Smaller is better.
I actually have a Black & Decker one. I'm just going to use the brand because it's the only one I know. But it was it was inexpensive. It was, you know, $20 or something like that. And it has the tip where it has a Phillips and a flathead on it. And I throw it in the same drawer with the 6-in-1 and the tape measure, because if you have to do something really quick, like take something apart or put something together, it's very easy. It holds a charge. There's no batteries to it. The battery's built into it. And it works really good for little odd projects. Once you get past the I need to do something really quick odd project to something better, I would suggest buying a better drill. But I agree with you, Eric. Smaller is better, and lighter is better if you can get it.
Right. It's like the guys that drive Hummers. They have like the biggest cordless drill you can buy, and it's like a 24 volt and it's got a huge battery on the end. And when you gotta put that on your belt or throw it in your pocket going up a ladder, it's a pain. And I have a Bosch 12 volt impact driver and drill driver. It was a set. I course, it's on the Garden Fork Amazon store. It's like $120 for the two of them. But I think the key thing is for any kind of cordless one, except for that little one in your toolbox, is the batteries are separate because the batteries will crap out before the tool does. Mine are 12 volt and they work amazing. I've dropped them off of ladders. I beat them up all the time. And I think if you buy cheap here, like we talked before, the batteries or the drive mechanism in the tool is going to crap out. So this is something where I think spending $100 or more is a good thing.
Yep. The utility drill that I was talking about, the inexpensive one, is kind of the, I need a quick something or other. But if you're actually going to do a project, I agree 100% with you. Amazingly, I had a drill kit that we had bought a number of years ago. It was one of those, you know, you get six of them in there with a circular saw and all this, and all the batteries are interchangeable from the Yellow brand. And I was using that and I thought it was great. It had an impact driver. And then I had some problems with the battery. So I ended up getting and buying a new set of drills because it was just a similar kit to what you had. I could not believe the weight difference between the drill that I use today that lasts just as long as the one that I had 4 years ago to today. Like, we put a deck together at the resort and use those really heavy drills. And I'm thinking, oh man, you would not believe how tired you get by lugging that thing around. And now that I know what the weight of the new one is, the one that you're talking about, amazingly different. So I can't stress it enough that you get what you pay for when you buy a cordless drill.
Yeah. I mean, Harbor Freight has them for really cheap, and I'm like, nope.
Like I said, having the one simple one in a drawer that has the battery built into it for the quick things is nice.
Yep.
But if you're really going to do real home improvement stuff or real DIY projects, step up to at least the $100 category, you know, and you can watch your sales because they happen to go on sale very often. It's a category that the home improvement stores like to use as what I call a price point leader, where they use that as a way to kind of get people into the hobby, because they know if you buy a cordless drill, you're probably going to have to buy some supplies at some point to, you know, screw together and do things. So they use them as a loss leader a lot of times.
Perfect. Hey, would you like more of Garden Fork or more of Eric? Would you like to get it in your email inbox? I send out, just about every week, I send out a little email about Eric's World and new stuff I posted. I even talk about podcasts I've listened to or just interesting stuff. And usually, almost always, at least one picture of the Labradors, Henry and Charlie. You can get that by signing up for Eric's Garden Fork email newsletter thing. There should be a link in the notes to this show. Just scroll down to the description of the podcast in your app, and I'm hope it's a clickable link. It should be. Or go to gardenfork.tv, and on almost every page, at the top of the page, should be a sign up. If you're on a mobile device, you might have to tap on there's a little menu bar, and then hopefully there it'll be a sign up, or scroll the bottom of a post and you can sign up there. Should be a link in the app here. More of Eric. It would be fun to have you along for the ride. It's kind of more brain dump Eric. Cool stuff. All right? All right, so that's our 10 things. Now we have some things not to buy.
I will say this. I wasn't in too much favor of the not to buy. I think the not to buy list from the Washington Post article was more about safety than anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, the three items they have on there are a table saw, a circular saw, and a hacksaw, which I could see people, if you were doing woodworking, buy yourself a nice table saw. If you're doing some outside projects, you know, buy yourself a circular saw. And if you're doing some inside stuff, a hacksaw makes sense. But don't buy them and not respect them, because those types of tools will definitely be dangerous very, very quickly, and you can hurt yourself pretty badly on them. So you kind of need to know what you're doing. So the first 10 items were kind of the, everybody should have something like that to do work. If you're really going to get into it, I think these products are products you should look at. But if you're a first timer, I don't think that it's a wise choice, I guess. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I actually have a Sears Craftsman table saw, and I actually use it as a work service rather than a saw.
Pretty expensive table.
I have two layers of cardboard on it, and then it's my work surface. Actually, a lot of videos you've seen where I got junk laying all over something, that the saw is underneath that too. I think a circular saw is a good thing to buy. With a little bit of practice and awareness that it can, you know, cut your finger off, you can build a lot with a circular saw.
Let me ask you this question, and this is a hot debated question. Cordless or corded?
I have a corded one. I'm not familiar with the cordless ones.
So I will say I have a cordless one, and if you need to do a lot of cutting, let's say you're building a deck, get the corded one because you're going to go through batteries. But if you're building a shelf in the garage, having a cordless one is nice. And if you're looking at the drill kits and the drill sets like we just talked about, a lot of them will have it where you can get a circular saw, a jigsaw, and let's say two drills for $199 or something like that along those lines. Those kits are really good if you're going to really take the next step up from just fixing a couple things in your home to actually building things. But if you're going to do some big projects, I'm going to frame a building or I'm going to do a deck or something like that, having a corded circular saw, just the torque on it, not having to go constantly replace batteries, those types of things. But if you're doing a couple little cuts, the circular saw probably can get most people by.
Neat. Well, that's I think that was pretty good. We have a couple more things to think about. And then I actually wanted to talk about a subject I felt very strongly about, but we're going to save that for the after show for our Garden Fork supporters, our Garden Fork patrons. And that's my experience with buying a solar charge controller. But we have a couple of reviews and some viewer mail. Would you like to hear that?
Yeah, let's go through that quick.
I'm not quite sure if I read this one already, but it's by it's a iTunes review from Sven Hard, and it says, "Done is better than perfect, 5 stars. Hey, Eric and friends, I've been waiting for a good time to sit down and write a proper review about Garden Fork and what it means to others and myself, and I figured done is better than perfect, so just start, right, Sven? I seem to always listen to your podcast when I'm en route to do something that might be stressful, and your podcast offers me some relief when I'm that kind of moment." Wow, we're like, what's that kind of thing on YouTube that, that kind of like...
ASMR?
ASMR, yeah.
Okay, everyone, close your eyes, take a deep breath, think of the wilderness.
Listening to your show is like hanging out with friends and solving the world's problems over a cup of coffee, which sometimes gets a little mad science-y, but I love it. Yay, keep up the good work. Oh, that's from Steve, not Sven. And then, nice. This is a new one, I know. One of my favorites, 5 stars, from DSU Dancer. Huh. "I love Eric and friends. Eclectic DIY, cooking, fixing, doing, gardening, etc. I'm always learning something and getting a new perspective when I listen to the podcast or watch the YouTube videos. Thank you for sharing all your knowledge." There you go.
Awesome.
I also got a couple of emails. I have an email list, which you can sign up for. You can go to the website, gardenfork.tv. There'll be a sign up right at the top of the website page. Or there's links in the show notes here. But Peter sent something. The Garden Fork sweatshirts and t-shirts were on sale for a couple of days last week, and I put out an email about that. And Peter said, "Eric, you need to put a prominent link on your website for these. I told my cousin about it. She wants one. I had to search all over. Oh, I had to go into my email trash to find this newsletter I sent." So he deleted my email. But when you go to the site, there's a couple of links across the top in the menu bar, and it says merch. And I thought everyone knows what merch means, but they don't. So I'm going to change it to, do I change it to clothing or sweaters or what would be a good word, Will?
T-shirts, sweatshirts.
Okay, that was easy.
I mean, are you going to get coffee cups?
Eventually. Gift store, maybe.
The Garden Fork gift shop.
I could have one in an airport.
Pick up your keychains on your way out.
Yeah. And then I got one from Carl. "Hello, Eric. Although done is better than perfect in some situations, I'm sure you will agree that some things must be done to the best of our ability. Now listen to this. Recently, I found myself in a trauma center with a subdural hematoma, which had to be drained by a neurosurgeon after a 12-foot fall." Wow. "I'm glad he did not follow your advice, but performed the procedure perfectly."
Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, I completely agree with that.
Oh, wow. That's definitely got to do that one perfect.
Yeah. Oh, we wanted to do a couple of follow-ups when we were talking about projects.
Yes.
Go ahead, Will. It's your list, so.
Oh, I'm lost now. I closed the list. I thought we were done. Oh.
Chalkboard paint.
Oh, yeah. So the chalkboard paint piece, you guys did a video on that. Can you do that with any color, or do you have to use black, or is black just kind of like because it's always a black chalkboard, or
Any color you want, yeah.
how does that hold up? Did that, hold up pretty well writing on it and then erasing it? Does it ever flake off or anything like that?
It hasn't flaked off. It's on a couple walls around the house, and we have written on it, and then you can just wipe it off with your shirt sleeve, basically. It's not. I don't really have a complaint about it. It just works really well, and it's kind of fun to in some places you wouldn't expect to find a chalkboard on the wall with something nice written on it, you know?
Yeah, nice thing too is you could paint an area on your wall, and then if you have some trim board or some extra boards laying around, you could make a frame around the outside of it to make it look like a picture. So it's actually the wall, but then it's got the frame around the outside where you can store the chalk and all that kind of stuff. I've seen people do that, and that's pretty neat.
You've been on Pinterest too long.
Actually, my wife watched your video and then she sent me something on Pinterest. So that's I'm guessing I'm going to be doing this very soon with the boys here at the house.
Well, speaking of the boys, you actually had a project to add to our previous podcast about the fish tank.
Yeah, so a lot of people were talking about, they have their kids at home because of school and that stuff. And one of the things that we did was we went on YouTube and we went on the internet and we looked up things about fish tanks. And my son kind of got into learning about what type of fish and about the science of the water and what goes well together and doesn't. And we did a bunch of research. And then actually, Amazon has a number of tanks, because a lot of the stores aren't open right now. We actually got a fish tank delivered to us with some of the stuff, and we put it together. And like, he's been testing the water every day and learning about the science of how the water works. And if you want a fun, easy project, I think we maybe have $40 or $50 total into the tank to get started. But it's going to take a couple of days to get going, and it kind of gives them something to do over and over again. So if you're stuck at home with the kids or looking for an easy weekend project. I hadn't had one since I was a kid, but it was one of those things where we spent a little bit of money, but there was so much research and so much learning that kind of went along with it, and it's fun. It was something to keep the kids occupied. So that's the only reason why I had it on as a suggestion point.
Cool. Fish tanks, yay. And
There you go.
you've posted some pictures of that on the Weekend Homestead Instagram feed, I know.
I've got some up there, and we're at this point right now where the plants are in and we have to let them sit for 2 weeks. So we're learning about how plants work underwater. And then, when things start to go back to normal, we'll get a fish, and put them in there, and we'll move on to the next part of it.
Yay. All right, there you go. I think that'll keep you guys busy. You can go shopping on the Garden Fork Amazon page and buy your stapler, your level, your cordless drills.
And then post your projects online. I'd love to see what you guys are doing. It was so cool when people took the 15 list and posted on the Garden Fork discussion group, "Hey, here's what I did in my kitchen," or "Here's what I did in my garage." If you guys are using these tools, post some of your projects. It'd be interesting to see what happens.
You can see the cleanest, most organized refrigerator ever.
Absolutely. I still, that's like the gold standard for refrigerators on the Garden Fork discussion group.
All right, so you are probably at your destination. You're going to go to where you are driving, or maybe you're walking. You're doing your walking isolation, whatever we want to call that. Will and I are going to go on to the after show and talk about my complaints about a cheap charge controller, but let us know your thoughts, radio at gardenfork.tv, and go out and make it a great day. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Will.
Thanks for having me.
Garden Fork Radio's executive producer is Jimmy Gutz. You can find more information about Jimmy and the custom hollow books he makes at hollowbooks.com. Our theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com. Other music used in the show is used under license from audioblocks.com.